So a buddy of mine, when we were just coming out of university, actually did a no asset procedure and wiped all of his debt. I've got a student loan of about 25 grand. I've got a couple credit cards. And he thought about it and was like, actually, you know what? I'm not going to probably buy a house in the next 4 years. So I'm going to do a no asset procedure. And he's done a no asset procedure. It wiped all of his debt. And he carried on. Welcome to another midweek episode of Checks and Balances brought to you by Partners Life. I'm Michael Vincent. This is James Blair. And today we've got an extra special guest, Kat Emerson from It's No Secret, here to delve into the Mum Hub with us.
Welcome back, Kat.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
So today, it's a little bit of context. Mm-hmm. My wife, Hannah, loves the Mum Hub group on Facebook. And occasionally it is just like all over the place. We're going from like dishwasher questions to finance questions to does this rash mean?
Yeah.
It's Love a wide it. Range of issues.
Love it.
It's a wide range of issues mums need to cover, isn't there?
There is. And I can know from personal experience, the like context switching of what's going through your brain in any one like hour is a lot. You know, you will be thinking about all three things.
Yeah. At the same time. Yeah. How old's your daughter now?
Almost two.
And what's a almost 2 year old up to? What phases are we in?
Oh, she's starting ballet. She's doing gymnastics. I feel like a extreme parent. I know saying that, but really it's just her running around
in different locations.
In a tutu, trying to do the same thing, different location. She's in a really, really fun stage of life though.
You do give me competitive mum vibes sometimes, Kat. Are you going to become a dance mum?
Maybe. We're currently on track to become golf parents though. Yeah. We took her to her first golf lesson, I know, on Tuesday or on Sunday morning, which was like a whole thing. But hey, it's a pretty fun time.
Sell out and take that Saudi money. Is that the
pretty much
the just on the live tour?
Yeah.
It's like you look at all these pros and they start young. So I'm like, why not? We'll see where we get to.
Need to be a prodigy.
That's why I'm not starting golf ever. I've given up. The last time I went to a driving range, the second ball I hit, I smoked a poo kicker and I was like, I'm out of here.
You're also incredibly uncoordinated. So you're not going to get a good return on investment. Let's not talk about when you broke your nose playing cricket. So we've got some. So I'm looking at these questions that Hannah's sending me and I'm going, I'm looking at the questions, I'm looking at the comments and I'm going, all right, somebody needs to step up and help these people because the questions and the comments are terrifying. And so I thought we'd grab Kat and answer some questions.
Have a bit of a chat.
Yeah. And let's just try and stick to the finance ones, eh? Let's not try and help with the rash.
Yeah. Yes. Can you just tell me though, Mike? all right, I've got a question. This one's two parts because we've got a question, but one of the comments is even more wild. So I'm keen to hear what your thoughts are.
Okay.
Kat, first one is how does everyone pay their council rates and keep up with it? Mm-hmm. We are constantly overdue and can't keep up with the payments as our interest on our mortgage is killing us at the moment. We just have no spare change to put towards rates.
Fascinating. I mean, okay, first things first on that, I don't think that your spare change should be the thing that goes to your rates. I would probably counter rates as an essential given that you obviously have a home and that's kind of categorized in non-discretionary spending. So that to me is if the rates is the thing that's putting you under pressure, how much else is put under pressure at the moment? I think it's certainly a reality. I'm going to assume, and this is a wild generalization, but a lot of people in this group are either on a single income or a reduced family income.
Yeah.
There's potentially not a ton of people on dual household incomes. And I think it's purposeful to acknowledge that that's just a really hard place to be. I was having this chat with some mum friends over the weekend and they were like, how do people do it on less than 100K a year? In Auckland, if you're running a family, paying for childcare, paying for kids, paying for a house, all that kind of thing, it is really expensive.
Yeah.
So that is the thing. But then, man, that's a bit terrifying, isn't it?
Yeah, it's terrifying the way they're thinking about it.
Yeah.
And then the other piece, over the last 18 months, how many conversations have we had with people, not just mums, just everybody, plan their life off 2% interest rates and have had a very hard reality when interest rates have jumped to 7%.
Yeah, well, when your interest cost triples.
Yes.
You put that on $1 million mortgage, you are in trouble. That is a lot of money to find, especially if you're on a reduced household income.
It also makes me think, Kat, your comment about, how can somebody be on one income? You think about our parents and how you could have a middle class job and be able to live a comfortable lifestyle, go on a holiday. And now there's how many families can have one income or the luxury for somebody to even just work part-time, right? Like, it's really, really hard.
It is really hard. And then the trade-off of, you know, many people want to maybe return to work, but then you've got the childcare factor also to consider. So, yeah, for those people, I think, I mean, not giving financial advice just on the internet is maybe a good place to start. But if you were really struggling with something like rates, I think you probably have to look at your whole budget, right? You can't just isolate in on the fact that it's the rates that's the problem, because I'm like, there's probably a lot of other things that are also the problem.
Yeah, I would say, you know, generalizing, highly likely this person does not have a budget.
Yeah.
Just the way it's been written and the lack of prioritizing rates. Rates aren't a, sorry, we don't have enough money for this. No, you need to pay them or eventually you're going to lose your home.
Yeah,
exactly. So, and you hit on a really good point there, Kat, which is, you know, people giving financial advice on the internet maybe isn't such a good thing.
Isn't that what we
follow.
Do?
I mean, yeah, to a degree.
You have some qualifications though, right?
Yeah, but like this is the bit that pisses me off is the second bit to this, right? So James, can you read out the comment, which is the advice that someone has given on the mum?
And the comment's better than the question. So speaking about not giving advice, we sold our home because the financial burden was just too much. Seems stupid, but we don't regret it. We have so much more spare money now and we are able to go on holidays, etc. I was even able to book a surgery I've wanted for ages, which wouldn't have been able to do if we hadn't sold our home. Not necessarily recommending, but this has worked well for us and I know lots of other people who have done the same too.
Technically, that's financial advice.
Oh, yeah.
But if you say, I don't recommend this, but it has worked for me, or this is what I would do in my situation, that's financial advice.
Yeah. That's pretty scary, isn't it?
That's a tough one. It is scary. I think like with that comment, to me, the thing that really stands out is the fact that there's obviously a lot more to it. Like, you know, it's all well and good to kind of speak in generalizations, but just to say, oh, I sold my house and therefore we're better off for it and more comfortable and now we can do these other things. It's like, well, okay, you have reduced an asset off your balance sheet. And then what? Like, are you putting money elsewhere into other income generating or like growth assets? Are you investing? It kind of sounds like they've just taken all the money that was available and reinvesting it into discretionary spending, which doesn't take
here for a good time, not a long time.
Yeah, to figure out that that's a pretty easy and quick way to like basically just negate your net wealth. And it's a really short-term focus thing. Like, I think that looking at this question or this comment, like there is validity in saying to people like sometimes renting is a better option for you, but there's a ton of caveats to that, which to your point, Mike, is why you would want to talk to a professional about that to make sure that in 10 years time you don't deeply regret this decision.
I mean, like, if you just think about things you could do off the top of your head, you could extend the loan term, you could go interest only, you could look at shifting out and renting your house out. You can look at, you know,
getting
you could
someone
go
in
house sitting. You could literally go house sitting, not pay any rent, and get someone to rent your house out. There's like a million things you could do before you sell your primary asset, which you've probably put a lot of time and effort into getting to the position where you can actually get the house.
And I guarantee this person's going to regret the decision, because it's not just they've sold the house when the market is down and assume down 10%, they've lost like 100 grand or whatever. It's that they're not even prioritizing putting that cash
somewhere else,
some other investment, and then regularly contributing to it. You're 100% right, Kat. They're just focusing on living paycheck to paycheck. And at some point in the future, it's going to go off and they're going to go, oh, I will want to retire at some point, or I will want to give my kids a head start. And they're going to regret that decision because, you know, whether they prioritize buying a house or they have other goals, their house is going to go from $1 million to $2 million over 10 years, because their houses do go up 5% a year. They're going to turn around and go, I wish I didn't do that.
I feel like we almost need to track this person down and stage an intervention. You know what I mean? Like, we're just like, you're going off course.
Just
you
what
need
are you
to
doing?
Correct this for you.
Absolutely. And, you know, everybody's got their own stuff going on. Maybe there's, you know, a lot of other context in terms of why they made certain decisions. And, you know, one may assume when they talk about surgeries, you tend to think about, you know, particular surgeries. But it might be, you know, something that they really needed. You just don't know. But yeah, it just feels very much thinking short term, not long term.
Absolutely.
Right. Before we move on, we talk all the time about planning and growing our wealth. but protecting that wealth is just as important. That's why having the right insurance in place can help when life goes unexpectedly.
And that's why this episode is brought to you by Partners Life, a New Zealand-operated award-winning insurance provider with over 300,000 Kiwis insured and 89% of claims paid.
Partners Life understand that having some insurance is better than having no insurance. They have flexible and personalized solutions for any budget or situation.
Check out their website in our show notes below.
All right, we've got a second one here.
Yeah.
I will read this one out. It's been a long one, but we'll go for it. Does anyone work in finance or know about large credit card debt? Well, boy, do I know about that. Asking on behalf of a mum in my group, she is terrible with money and has a large amount of credit card debt. Over 7 different cards and banks, including Gem. That's an issue already. She has been in this situation multiple times before and her family has pulled her out of it. This time she has 40,000 plus debt on the cards and she doesn't work anymore and won't be able to. She rents and has no assets other than a car worth no more than $3,500. She can't keep up with the money she gets each week, which is about $800 to pay the minimum payments, and she's having to use the money she's paid on the credit cards to then buy her essentials for the week. You are in a debt trap, pretty much.
So she's drawing the money back out.
Straight away.
Yeah. And if you are drawing it as a cash withdrawal, you're in dire straits there.
Why, Mike?
Because the way that interest works on a credit card is you are charged, there's a couple of different interest rates, balance transfers, 0-1% usually. A normal purchase would be about 17 to 19%. And then you get a certain amount of time where that is interest free. A cash withdrawal is about 23% from day one. So that is a very high interest rate on that. And then the way that you pay things off doesn't you necessarily mean you are paying the cash withdrawal off first. So you may be paying cheaper transactions off first while this other transaction, which is 23%, is just sitting in the background. So it's a real trap if you're withdrawing cash on a credit card.
Yeah, and then if you're taking the cash out and you're 23% from day one with the 17 to 19%, it's like 45 days before you start paying interest, right?
Yep.
So quite different.
Absolutely. Would a no asset procedure or bankruptcy be better for her? Her family don't want her to be able to access any type of credit cards again, as she gets into this mess every time and they can't afford to keep bailing her out. Do both NAPs, a no asset procedure, and bankruptcy stop you from getting more credit card and loans going forward?
So, Mike, there's some questions and alluding to bankruptcy.
Yeah.
How does bankruptcy work?
So bankruptcy in New Zealand, basically what happens is you file or you declare bankruptcy. And a bankruptcy usually lasts, I think it's 4 years that you are technically a bankrupt for, where you can't be a manager or a director of a company, can't earn over a certain amount, can't take out any kind of real debts. And they can, basically what you're saying is, I can't afford to get myself out of this situation. We're going to draw a line in the sand. And for a certain amount of time, I'm not going to be able to have any large financial responsibilities. Very difficult to get a mortgage. So that's 4 years. And then after that, you will stay on the bankruptcy register for 7 years from the date that you went bankrupt.
Okay.
So when you go to take out credit, a credit institution or a lender will check the bankruptcy file as part of your credit check. And if your name is on there, you better have a bloody good reason as to why they want to give you money, right? And if you have any old debts that were cancelled off with ANZ, they will probably decline from giving you a bank account and they'll probably decline from giving you any credit as well. Yeah. So the bank can tell you, they can close your accounts and kind of shoo you off.
Makes you, like, based off that explanation, it seems like bankruptcy would be a good idea for her?
Well, not quite. There's a technical term and they're called a no asset procedure, an NAP, which is a minor form of bankruptcy that lasts 1 year. You can wipe off up to $50,000. And they can sell any assets, especially any assets that are linked to the finance to try and recoup some money. And you're only on the register for 4 years. So it's just a minor form of bankruptcy. Neither of these, bankruptcy might, but I know a no asset procedure won't take into account a student loan or any tax arrears. Whereas I think a bankruptcy will, although I'd have to check that specifically. But yeah, an NAP is probably more suitable for the person in this scenario because
they've got $40,000 of debt, basically.
So, Mike, you've got a quite interesting story of somebody you know who's been down a unique road with us.
Yeah. So a buddy of mine, when we were just coming out of university, actually did a no asset procedure and wiped all of his debt. Now, I'm not sure, because I know at the time he told me that it cleared his student loans. I'm not sure if maybe the rules have changed since we went to university a long, long time ago. But basically, he was like, I've got a student loan of about 25 grand. I've got a couple credit cards because, you know, they just used to hand them out to everyone at university and an overdraft, this and the other. And he thought about it and was like, actually, you know what? I'm not going to probably buy a house in the next 4 years because I'm starting my career and I'm going to go traveling. So I'm going to do a no asset procedure. And he's done a no asset procedure. It wiped all of his debt and he carried on.
I mean, Kat, like, you're screwing the taxpayer in that situation, which I don't like. But if you think about it, if you're not going to buy a mortgage over that period of time.
Yeah.
I can see the logic.
There is more logic to that. I feel like as well, from what you've explained, Mike, like the no asset procedure feels more palatable, particularly for this case, rather than bankruptcy. Bankruptcy feels like it could have some more flow on effects for longer.
Yeah.
In ways that perhaps this person doesn't currently, you know.
Yeah.
Envision.
The thing is, quite often with a no asset procedure or a bankruptcy, especially a bankruptcy, in New Zealand, it can kind of hinder you from getting a job in some circumstances. I know a lot of people view bankruptcies in New Zealand quite negatively, which is actually
Way worse than asset procedure. Asset procedure, I'm like, it kind of like just sounds a bit low key.
It sounds like banking jargon to like soften the blow of something that's still really bad.
Yeah. I mean, like, but in New Zealand, bankruptcies are viewed quite negatively. In the States, bankruptcies aren't viewed anywhere as near as negatively. It's kind of like you had a punt on something, you went bankrupt. Like, you look at Donald Trump, man's been bankrupt like 15 times.
Yeah.
He doesn't care.
Yeah. So like, instead of going like, I'm poor, it's like, I'm just having some cash flow
difficulties
right now.
And, you know, as my bank, we should share in the cash flow difficulties.
This was a JV. I mean, Kat, the other piece, like, you look at the story, it's just really sad, isn't it?
It is. And look, I think, like, I mean, the person is asking, obviously, because I need to, like, get out of the negative situation now, and I can really feel for that. The obvious underlying part of this, though, is, like, well, how do you know that that behavior is just not going to repeat immediately post getting out of this current situation, because it's clearly a case that this has sort of happened before. You know, there are other options that people can look at. You don't know if this person has a KiwiSaver, but you can make financial hardship withdrawals. Like, there are other things. You obviously want to probably go and have a chat to a mortgage broker or a broker to talk about consolidation and debt in the first instance before just immediately filing for bankruptcy.
This looks like it would be quite difficult to consolidate because of the lack of income.
True.
Like, and just if I just taking this for red, like seven cards, including Jim.
Yeah.
I actually, not working. I actually think an NAP might be the best, because you're going to be locked out of getting credit for probably, she's probably going to be locked out of getting, like, definitely for a year, she won't be able to get credit cards.
Yeah.
But I would say probably for quite a bit longer, because your circumstance has to change dramatically.
Yes.
To then go back to a credit institution and say, I want money. They will say, here's where you were then. You've got to prove to me why you're different now. But she's also not going to be able to save any money.
Yeah.
Like, you can't have more than, I think, $3,500 in a bank account under a no asset procedure. Mm. Otherwise, they will take it from you. So, I actually think an NAP might be the best
option
in this instance. Yeah.
Not
financial advice.
I think part of it as well is let's say you do that and you wipe the debt. There's a whole bunch of underlying issues still to be resolved. Clearly, the family is incredibly worried that she would go and do this again. She's got no income. You would assume a baby, which means a level of expenses. Yep. Like, how are we gonna get out of this situation?
Yeah.
So the lifestyle needs to come right down from wherever it is right now. There needs to be income in the household, because you can't get anywhere without some income coming into the household. And there's probably a whole range of why do we have these behaviors around money. Where would you start, Kat, with?
It's a really good question. I think I would point her in the direction of free services. So there are things like Christians Against Poverty that basically step in and help people in these exact situations. Sometimes they will even pay people out of these situations, essentially. That's kind of like the highest end of help that you could get from an organization like that. At the lower end, you could basically just get budgeting or like kind of financial advice support without needing to pay for it. Mm. You know, having a look at those types of community services, talking to WINS, talking to the Citizens Advice Bureau, all that kind of like community-based advice support is probably the first point of call, because I'm assuming someone like this going and walking into a bank to try and help them, that's probably a pretty daunting task. Yep. And it's not going to go so well. I think they need to, yeah, have that kind of more community grassroots support first to really help them get back from here. The other thing I would call out, because I think a lot of people overlook this, is to have a baby, there's obviously a man involved in this situation. Whether or not those people are together, we don't know. However, you do have claim over things like their KiwiSaver, particularly for this type of instance, but even in general. So let's say that there is another person involved in this relationship. They are able to apply for something like a KiwiSaver financial hardship withdrawal. We may have to assume that the mum in this situation doesn't have a large KiwiSaver balance if she hasn't been working for a while, or there's no income. So there are things like, it's not just, you know, your individual assets as the parent or like the mum or the dad in this situation. There is recourse to assets from the person that has also given you this child.
Would that depend though as well on like how the, so like question around whether they're a couple or not. And obviously, you know, it might be their joint debt if they're a couple, but like if she's just racked up these debts by herself and, you know, there's, I assume not $40,000 of cost, you know, child attached to the child.
Yes.
That other person's not necessarily liable for that debt, right?
Correct. But I guess if they were to go down the path that Mike suggested of a no asset procedure and then they needed some ongoing income support, that is absolutely where you could have recourse to go back to whoever the other person is in the relationship.
The point here is an NAP is just going to clean slate her current debt.
But it's if not
the financial
help.
Situation doesn't change, be in this, like, we are making assumptions that she might be blowing some of this, but if she's literally just spending that money on
essentials,
then
living,
she will be, she has no choice but to be in the same circumstance because she will continue to provide for a child.
Yep.
So, yeah, there's a lot to unpack there, but I don't know. You just
Last question, Kat.
Yes.
Kat, with the church,
mm.
do they only help people?
No, anyone.
And will they do like?
She ain't even got to be baptized.
No.
Oh, will they do a little test of maybe like throwing some? I mean, I've seen Mike get holy water thrown him, immediately goes into flames. Will they do a little bit of holy water to check if you?
I think they're a little bit more all inclusive now, so that's fine. Yeah, but it is. I will give them a shout out because they're probably one of the better financial services organisations that in New Zealand that provide that type of actual support to anyone.
Mm.
Not a lot of people know about it.
Yeah.
Nice.
Okay. Mm. Well, did we learn a little bit about the Mum Hub today?
Yeah.
Yeah. Next time we'll go to the dishwashers and the rashers, okay? So, Mike, if you can do a little bit of Dr. Googling before the next one. Kat, thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Please make sure to go check out Kat's podcast as well. It's no secret. It's a hell of a time. Also waiting for my invite back, Kat. No pressure. And thank you to Partners Life for sponsoring. If you've got any questions, Mum Hub related or not, please let us know. If you like us doing the Mum Hub and the Reddit type episodes, let us know. It's really good questions for us to dig into. Please subscribe, review, and like, and we'll catch you next time. Cheers.